quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Can we get serious now?
One thing that did happen during the 60s was some music of an unusual or experimental nature did get recorded and did get released. Now look at who the executives were in those companies at those times. Not hip young guys. These were cigar-chomping old guys who looked at the product that came and said, I don't know. Who knows what it is? Record it, stick it out of it, sells, all right. We were better off with those guys than we are now with the supposedly hip young executives who are making the decisions of what people should see and hear in the marketplace.
Success in the music business begins with a dream, a vision. This podcast will give you, the listener, the insight and tools to turn that vision into a reality. Meet the industry professionals who work day by day behind the scenes, helping to make those dreams come true. Welcome to the business side of music.
In the studio with us today, actually a couple, well, I'm going to say one really cool guy and then my co-host, Tom Sabellis, here with us. Tom, who founded, created the business side of music. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I knew there was going to be something derogatory or mean-spirited in some way. Thank you very much.
Yes. If I couldn't slam you, my wife will, or your wife.
Oh, thank you very much.
And then sitting across the table from us, let me just do a real quick bio here on this guy, so we know who he is. Yeah.
Is there a quiz?
There will be for you when this is all over. All right. You can tell me everything I got wrong. Writer, recording artist, record producer, and entrepreneur. See, I got that word in there, the big
entrepreneur.
One.
Entrepreneur.
A lot of syllables.
Wow.
Yeah. Originally from Waurika, Oklahoma. Did I say that right?
You did.
And Waurika, is that the town that was in the movie Twister that got taken out?
It has definitely been hit a few times, yes. Of course, it's in Oklahoma. Everything's been hit.
Yeah, sooner or later. Just have a basement. Moved to Nashville playing guitar for the Rambos. Wrote the song Father's Eyes. The song Finally, recorded by T.G. Shepherd, which reached number one on the country charts. Grammy-nominated artist, Dove Award-winning artist. With his wife Cassie, is involved with Nashville Rescue Mission, T.J. Martell Foundation, and the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Oh, yeah. And by the way, also, I didn't know this. I just found this out. He's a licensed pilot who once landed, no relation, on Stephen Curtis Chapman's lawn.
That's true.
Gary Chapman, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Normally I say, hey, how'd you get in the business? How did this all start? But how did you land, or maybe I should say, why did you land a plane on Stephen Curtis Chapman's lawn?
It was his mistake.
Oh, was he in the plane at the time?
No, he was on the ground.
Oh.
And it was a helicopter. It was not a plane. I was out flying around one day, and he didn't live that far from me at the time. And I just looked down, and he's there with, the myriad of children, and they're all around the pool. Like, they had a little pool behind the backyard, or in the backyard. And so he's motioning me, come down. Okay, I look down, and I see what I know is the inevitable result. And that is that lots of lawn furniture and pool floats and all anything that can be moved by wind. I am the hurricane.
Yeah.
And it's coming. And he just kept motioning me down.
And you followed.
I just did what he asked me to do. It was not a great result.
Hey, but you're still friends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, yeah.
How do you not be friends with Steve? Squeaky is what I call him.
Squeaky.
He's the cleanest man I know.
Yeah, he is.
It's ridiculous.
And a pretty decent songwriter.
It's annoying.
Yeah. And an okay performer.
Yeah.
So talking about songwriting, something you always loved doing as a young kid, you just get into it one day by accident.
You know, I was the kid that could finish the dirty rhyme faster than anybody else. There once was a man from Nantucket kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
That was the extent of my writing until, honestly, and pretty much until I got to Bible college. I got into writing a little bit there. And then left Bible college after a year and a half. God called me out of Bible college. I may be the only guy. No, I left, honestly, I think more than anything to avoid getting kicked out, because it was
at that point.
It was on the bubble.
Yeah.
I got into a big argument with the professor about whether or not the wine that Jesus created at Cana contained alcohol or not.
Was that, wouldn't it just be downhill. Concord grape juice at that point?
Well, no.
No?
No, the party got better. No. You don't do that with grape juice.
Was that school in Springfield, Missouri, by any chance?
No, but, oh, okay. But it's the sister school in Waxahachie, Texas.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And one of my best friends from college is now the president of that, yeah. that college.
Well, maybe he'll let you back in.
No, it's all washed up now. We're fine.
Yeah.
I think they would give me an honorary something if I wanted it.
Well, if they're listening, maybe that'll motivate
maybe,
them.
Maybe that'll do it.
Yeah. Bring them a bottle of wine.
No, but then when I came to town, not the very first job I had, but I had the second job that I had when I came to town was with the Rambos. And Dottie Rambo really took me under her wing and showed an interest in the writing side.
And what a sweet, sweet lady, too.
Yeah, most of the time.
Oh.
Most of the time.
No, Dottie was awesome. She was a great lady.
And very tragic to what happened in the end.
You know what? She went exactly like she should have.
Yeah.
For her to be killed in a tour bus,
doing what she loved to do.
You can't write that better.
Yeah.
No. I guarantee you, she would prefer that over hospice any day.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And she wrote quite a few great songs.
Quite a few.
Yes.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I would write songs on, you know, going down the road on the bus. And when I had something I wanted her to hear, you know, say, do you mind listening? And she was always great. And she'd give me critique and really, really help me just with the, you know, just some structure stuff. But more than anything, the vulnerability side, the honest side, to just never, ever be afraid to write what you believe. Just do it. I came in one day, we're rolling down the road, and I came in and I played a song for her. And, you know, she was very, very picky. Any great songwriter is. And she would always just pick them apart, you know. Well, that's good, honey, but that bridge, I don't know, you know, so there was always something wrong with them. And I did this one top to bottom. She just said, well, that's a great song.
Wow.
You should do that tonight in the concert. And I was like, wow.
No critique on it. She liked it all the way through.
And then I didn't think she would do that. I didn't think she'd follow through with it.
Did that put a smile on your face?
She absolutely did. Like halfway through the evening, she was our guitar player. Playing guitar and pedal steel for them. She said, he's written a song I really want you to hear. And I got up and did this song. And it was, at the end of it, you know, those moments when the audience likes what you did. And there'll be two or three that'll stand up. And then somebody else will see that. And they go, well, yeah. And it just kind of, the audience persuades itself to stand up. It was not that. It was just that popcorn, boom, everybody
wow.
up. And she never asked me to sing again. She didn't. And that was actually what made me quit. What at the time was an extremely lucrative job. I was getting $175 a show. And we were working, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week. And I was a single guy, and it was 1978 or whatever.
That was good money back then.
Are you kidding? Yeah. I was rich. Yeah. I was crazy wealthy.
Was that the time that Reba was with them?
That was an interesting question.
Okay.
It is a very long answer, but I'll sum. My first job was with the Downings. I don't know if you remember
them.
Yes,
I sure.
I don't.
Paul and Ann Downing.
Ann Downing, I know, yes.
And then Donnie and Reba McGuire. During the time that I was with the Downings, that had just started to go, because then on the Rambo side, there was Reba Rambo, who was married to Landy Gardner. I went from the Downings to the Rambos.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know where you're
Donnie
going with this.
Went from Joy McGuire to Reba. And Joy went from Donnie to Landy. They literally
figure that one
they
out.
They just switched.
I need a roadmap.
No, I can diagram it out for you, but that's what happened. So I was right in the absolute middle of that
whole emotional dynamic. I remember when that happened. Okay, I'm sorry I asked
that's
that
okay.
question.
No, it's okay.
That's okay.
That's history.
We have time to fill. It's good.
Yeah.
They did make good music together, though.
Oh, they did. Yeah. So, after that happened, I just kind of knew that I was supposed to chase that. And I quit. After about, there's probably 3 or 4 months after that, I quit and just knew that I was going to starve for a little bit. And didn't care. I was in a one-bedroom apartment with 3 other guys in Hendersonville, and we were all thrilled. And that song actually got me my first publishing deal.
When you first started, because you obviously went to college, were you seeking a different direction at that point?
No, I didn't. I wasn't seeking any direction.
Yeah.
I was going to that college because that was the only one my parents would pay for. It was a Christian school, and, you know, 90% of the people that go there are going to become pastors, and the other 10% are going to be missionaries.
But you were playing music at that point.
Yes.
When did you start?
I started playing guitar when I was six.
Okay.
Started playing in church when I was seven and just never stopped. I just loved it.
And you played pedal steel.
I did.
Were you self-taught?
I was. Yeah. Yes.
That's not an easy instrument. That's not an easy one.
It'll keep you off the street. It definitely.
Wow, that's
or
not.
Or put you back on the street.
Or put you right back out there. Yeah. No, I still love pedal steel. It's just a fascinating instrument. If you're a rub your tummy, pat your head person,
right?
It's fabulous.
Yeah, I can't even walk and chew gum.
No, so you know what it is? It's a helicopter that can't kill you.
Yeah. Or spread lawn furniture all over the
place.
There
you go.
Yeah.
It's that both feet, both hands, both knees, a big chunk of your brain. If you can drive a backhoe, you can probably play pedal steel.
We're going to have Tommy White on the show in a few weeks, who's the Grand Ole Opry house player.
Oh, I know Tommy very well.
And I'm going to have to ask him if he can drive a backhoe.
He can't.
Yeah, okay.
No, Tommy was he was the steel guy in the house band that I had on during the TNN days.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that too, because that's where you and I actually first met.
Yep.
You're not going to remember that.
Yeah,
but,
I totally remember. Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember Bob.
I was the guy backstage. Were you? I was the guy pointing at my watch with my artist going, you need to talk a little more.
Can you talk more?
Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have some more conversation with Gary Chapman here, co-host Tom Sabella. We got a lot of things to talk about here on the business side of music.
Hi, this is Bill Sienkay. You've probably never heard of me, but you've heard of the business side of music. Good thing. Listen on.
You're listening to the business side of music.
Hi, everyone. I'm Larry Butler, and I want to send you a free digital copy of my new book, The Singer-Songwriter Rulebook, 101 Ways to Help You Improve Your Chances of Success. That's right. Everything you need to know to launch your career as a singer-songwriter, all based on my 40 years in the live performance arena, and believe me, I've seen it all. In my book, you'll find the 10 things you have to deal with before even thinking about becoming a singer-songwriter-performer. You'll also learn about the 5 things every singer-songwriter can do this weekend to make their live show better. 5 things I can guarantee that you are not doing already. Plus, there's tips on songwriting and staging, photo and video shoots, publishing, merch, dozens of other topics, all written for people who don't particularly like to read. And again, it's free. Just go to the Business Side of Music website homepage and look for my book cover. Click on it, and a free digital copy of my book will be yours. I'm Larry Butler, and I approve of this message. Thanks.
You're listening to the Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, Tom Sabella is joining me today. Tom, always like having you on the show.
Well, thank you.
It's good to have you here.
Even after the intro was so devastating to me, I think I can share a little bit of what's going on here.
But my wife told me to say that, and she listens.
I know.
So,
but she helps us out so much, I can't say anything bad. I can't,
I know. Yeah, she keeps us on the straight and narrow. Gary Chapman is on the show.
Yes,
that's true. I'm right here.
We should always say that.
Yes, Gary Chapman is on the show.
When I said writer, recording artist, record producer, and then the big word, entrepreneur.
And that's where he's at
right
now.
You have another gig on top of everything else you do.
I have a lot of gigs, but that one is occupying a huge amount of time. Yes.
I bet.
Yes.
I bet. We've actually been out to your place in Fairview.
Yep.
Wonderful, wonderful place.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about that entree down the road.
It's an interesting and very long story. All my stories are long. Have you not noticed that?
That's okay. We got plenty of tape.
But I can sum you having tape. That's awesome.
Yeah, a lot of tape. 2-inch, by the way.
Old school, yeah. Two inch.
Yeah. Wait till we edit this show down.
Yeah, really. Yeah, my son, Matt, got the very first industrial hemp growing license in this state in 2014, 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. And he rented an acre from his mom's farm and built a 10,000 square foot greenhouse and just went to work. And he has killed it. He just absolutely has knocked it out of the park. Really proud of him. He called me about 3 years ago and said, can you come help? I said, I don't know anything about that business. Aside from trying to find weed back in the 70s, I've never tried to sell it. No. And this, obviously, it does not get you high. No, actually, that mistake doesn't get made anymore. Most of the public are very educated at this point.
Because the
CBD has it has to have 0.3% or less of the delta-9 cannabinoid, the THC, the thing that makes you high. So, it doesn't do that. It just does a lot of other really good things for you. So I said, I don't know anything about this business. What do you need? And he said, I'm really not sure, but I'm sure you can help us. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I come to find out there were a few things. I've been in town for 44 years now, and I haven't angered anyone that didn't have it coming. And as a result of that, there are a lot of good relationships, and those are valuable, I think, to help build the brand and the company. And then the other piece of it is I've been in entertainment my whole life. And this business, because it's largely still, to this moment, unregulated, that's changing, you know, rapidly. But it's just full of snake oil salesmen and liars, just con men and liars. So I can help alleviate a lot of wasted time and effort. They needed an old guy that's made a bunch of mistakes, basically.
Which is why
we're here. Yes. Now, how do we know that it's not the snake oil? What is, if I'm looking for CBD oil, you're saying, what do I look for to know that it's good
well,
stuff?
Ours, besides buying from you. Any reputable company should have a QR code that you can point your phone at, and it'll take you to a COA that'll be a certificate of analysis that'll give you absolutely down to the minute degree everything that's in that product.
Okay, so it's laboratory tested.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, independent, third-party, laboratory tested. That's a mandatory. If they're not doing that, don't buy it. Just don't buy it.
So now you got your own place.
We have a bunch of places. Yeah.
Bunch of places.
Yeah. We've got the place in Fairview, I think, that you went to.
Right.
And then we have a store in East Nashville.
Which is absolutely beautiful, by the way. And your son put the wood on the front of the building?
Yeah,
That was unbelievable when you told me about that. He took the old wood from a barn.
Yep.
I don't know what this has to do with the music business, but I'm interested in it.
No, it was cool. He's a crafty little guy.
And he put the whole front on his store, and it's just beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Your son got his talent from maybe his mother.
He did.
His mother.
No, but he's really good at building what he dreams. He's very, very good at it. Yeah, that we've got the place there in East Nashville. Our offices are in East Nashville. I'm dedicating a lot of time right now to a grow operation that a buddy of mine and I are doing in conjunction, obviously, with the company, but out in Kingston Springs, pretty significant greenhouse grow. There's 70-something stores, you know, greater Nashville area that carry our product.
That you're supplying.
Sure. And we white label for, I think, 30 or 40 different companies.
Wow.
I was going to ask that question. So you do it for other people?
Absolutely.
Also,
yeah.
Cool.
We've actually got a kind of a large launch happening next week. John Schneider, who's an old buddy.
I saw that.
He's doing CBOD, like uppercase right. C, uppercase B, lowercase O.
Bo Duke, for anybody that doesn't know there who John go. Schneider is.
It's a wonderful business. I've been a part of a few things that made a little money in my life. I've been a part of a few things that did some good in the world. I've never seen anything do so much of both so quickly.
Isn't that nice?
It's awesome.
It is.
One of the things you said earlier, building relationships is very important in the music industry.
Sure.
Building relationships and not asking for something.
Right.
That's one thing I found out moving to Nashville. I just moved slowly, and I was able to meet some really great people who told me, well, you didn't ask for anything. That's why we like you.
Yeah.
How about that? It's amazing. And, you know, I didn't have any agenda. But
yeah.
that's the relationship that you and I have had and the people that we run with.
Absolutely.
It just seems to work, and our relationships
grow. Well, it's a community.
It's a community.
It's a genuine community. It's basically a small town. And if you're... If you live in a small town, this is all part of my platform when I run for president. You have to live in a small town.
It takes a village.
You can steal something in a small town, but then you're a thief.
Yeah.
And you can screw around on your wife, but then you're the guy that I can't leave my wife with.
Right.
Everybody knows, you know, who's going to help, who's going to hurt, and it polices itself. And that's what, at least certainly from when I came here in the late 70s, the music business was very much that way.
Yeah.
And I think it still is on some levels, but to the degree that it gets splintered, you know, as a result of the streaming solution and illegal downloads and all the stuff that has made songwriting a pretty horrible profession to get into.
And these guys that you run into that want to take your money to review your song.
Yeah. There's going to be more snakes when the structure gets shaken.
And it's harder to make the money now with the streaming and everything going on. The other thing about you personally, though, you're a very, very busy man. How do you keep all that going? I know it's very difficult because I know how busy I am.
Right.
But you're structured. Are you really that well structured? Are you just
I kinda run
on energy?
I love the appearance of chaos, much like I loved having a reputation for being crazy. He's crazy. He's dangerous.
Yeah,
he's going to kill himself. People said about that about me for my entire life.
Yeah.
And the reality is I'm always very careful. I'm fine if it looks dangerous, but I never do anything that I haven't figured out.
Yes.
So you, it's the same way.
So you have a plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure.
The persona that you present is one thing, but in the back of your mind, you know where that's driving you to.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Crazy like a fox.
Crazy like a fox.
It's more fun. It's a lot more fun.
Should be.
Yeah. Well, that's why I didn't trust you the first time I met you, so that was okay.
But see, that's okay with me. That's okay. Let's be wary of each other.
Let's talk about streaming and, you know, Music Row, the big thing. In fact, I signed a petition to save the home recording studios here in Nashville.
Right.
And nothing against the major studios. I think, you know, they all have a history and they have a reputation. Of course, the City Metro Council wants to basically eliminate the home recording studio. Nashville, at least in the early days, a lot of it was built on Music Row. It was built on the music scene here.
It was in houses, by the way.
Yeah, it was exactly. That's what Music Row was. It was houses.
Sure it was.
You know, they're trying to shut that down. And of course, they've all but bulldozed Music Row down and built condos there.
Right.
With streaming and that whole scene, do you see a future outside of, especially for a songwriter? And we've had this conversation with Danny Myrick and Reggie Hamm and a couple other songwriters in the past. Is there a future for the songwriter with streaming being the way it is? And especially now in a city like Nashville where we are very boutique. It is, you know, you don't have Music Row anymore. You have to go to Berry Hill or you have to go to Hendersonville or Franklin or wherever it is to find that purpose, that gig. Where does the songwriter come into play here?
6 months ago, I would have said there's no hope. Outside of an overarching belief that has driven a bunch of significant decisions for me in my life, and that is that creativity always wins eventually. It doesn't always happen as quickly as you want it to, but if you're really creative and you're really gifted at what you do, you're eventually going to get rewarded. And it may not be the way that you thought it was going to be. It may not be as quick as you thought it would be, but it's creativity wins. It's its own reward for one thing.
Yeah.
If you do it well and you do it right, you win, period. It's over. But beyond that, to make a living at it, 6 months ago, I would have said, I don't see an answer.
What changed your mind?
Just to put a fine point on it, and you guys have probably gone over these numbers with other people, but, you know, having the first song I got cut went number one. It was Father's Eyes. The song I sang at the Rambos that night was Father's Eyes. Amy goes on to record that. We met. That turned into a whole nother 20-something year life of songs and hits, and I had a bunch of stuff recorded by everybody else. I did well. I did very well and had a body of work that was easily, you know, retirement. This will keep me going when I stop going, right? No. In the past, I guess now 10 or 12 years probably, that evergreen royalty stream, which was actually increasing because occasionally people would, you know, re-record something or whatever, it certainly was not waning. It's off 96%.
Wow.
So it's essentially gone. And that's what kind of made me go, oh, I should probably sell some weed. No.
Started growing it. That's all.
It kind of makes you, it sort of makes you reevaluate because you got to be honest. And certainly in my case, as of 6 years ago, you know, I've got four kids. I've got a son who's 32. I have daughters 30 and 28 and 6. Yeah. I'm that guy.
God bless you.
And it's awesome. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I knew what I was getting into, and it's great. But I can't just sit around and mope about how things used to be. That's not an option for me. And probably wouldn't have been anyway, because moping is very annoying to watch, and it's even more annoying to see it in your mirror.
And it's unproductive.
And you don't get jack done. I would have said, no, there's no hope. I have found, they're not even launched yet. I actually talked to the guy yesterday who's driving it, a fellow named David Browning. I don't know if you're David or not. Really, really good, solid, respected guy, songwriter, producer, studio guy, gets it, understands the business. He's done fine. He got bummed. And he and a buddy of his that I've not met yet, but apparently he's the business side of things. They have structured a platform called Crowd Music. You go to crowdmusic.com, and from this point forward, anything that I create will be there. It will not be on iTunes. It will not be on Spotify. It will not be on Pandora. It will not be on Amazon. It will not be available anywhere except there. And if you love what I do, you need to come over there and pay me for it.
Right.
Okay? That's just it's a business. Come on, it just is. I do plenty of free stuff. I go out and play gigs all the time that cost me money because I believe in the moment. I do that. This is not a generosity versus greed question. It's a business, though. And if you want me to keep doing what I do and put the amount of time into it that is required to make it excellent, then you need to support me. And that's basically the principle of this thing. And I truly believe their model will succeed. And here's why. They have eliminated greed from the equation. The guys that started this thing, they're not going to let it get beyond their initial mission of serving. Are they going to make money out of it? Sure they are. So am I, if it works.
But why shouldn't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. No, they should.
They should make money.
It's a great idea. They should benefit dramatically. I have no problem with it. But I know because I've seen the numbers that they're showing people who want to engage. And if you want to engage, go talk to them. They'll be transparent. I'm not going to do that here. They're taking very reasonable annual salaries as the owners and builders of the platform. And that's just because it's not about that to them. It's not.
So crowdmusic.com
right.
is if you own a piece of music or mm-hmm. you own bodies of music,
right?
You can put it on this site.
Yes.
And then it is a streaming service or it's not a streaming service?
There's a bunch of different ways. Each artist can structure their platform, their individual platform, in a multiple number of ways. You can subscribe to me, essentially, if you want to pay me $4 or $5 a month. And then I'll tell you what you're going to get out of it. You're going to get at least one new great song. You're going to get very close personal interaction. You know, they've got it set up to do, you know, like a live stream from mm-hmm. from your house, or if you're out on the road somewhere, or you just it's social media to some degree with your group of people.
Right.
But for them to be in that group, they have to pay you. And you determine what that is. That's entirely your call.
And you still own your intellectual property when
Absolutely.
You go in there. Okay, so okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So you're not giving up anything there.
No.
You're just paying these people to put your music on their site, and then
you're actually moving the decimal point to the right.
Exactly.
There you go.
That's exactly what happened. Significantly.
Which is needed. It definitely is.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I'm fired up about it. There have been a couple of delays. They were initially going to launch in November, but they've been really great delays because it's been significant artists.
But they're online now.
No.
Oh, no. They're not.
Well, I mean, you can go and see what they do.
Right.
But I think they officially launched now. It's going to be another couple of months.
Gotcha.
But that's because some significant artists, some people that will move the needle, are looking at it going, oh, really? And when you get a few of those people, the dominoes will fall.
Right. I agree.
But certainly for an independent artist, like if you're just getting started, this would be so much better than getting a record deal. Much better. A, you're going to get completely raped in that deal. It's never going to work out for you. I promise. It's just not going to happen. Very, 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 very seldom will you really win. And when you do, 20 years from now, you're going to look at the numbers and go, wow, I really didn't.
Yeah.
I got hosed.
This is a Nashville company?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to talk to these guys.
That's what I was
Tom
saying.
And I are looking at each other. We're going to get them on the
I'll
show.
I'll hook you up. I will hook you up.
Hey,
please.
Do you know anybody?
And they'll be happy to do it. It is a significant marketing launch. So, you know, they'll be wanting to push every button they can.
Absolutely. Get them on the show. We're going to take another break, get in another word for our sponsors. In the studio with us today, Gary, and sitting across from me, or maybe I should say to the right of me, co-host, co-founder, co-producer, and chief cook and bottle washer, friend of mine, Tom Sabella.
I like this part a whole bunch better than being the host. I just sit here and take it all in.
Just watch it happen.
Watch it happen.
Throw things at me.
And then when I don't like what happens, we edit it out.
Yeah, we edit it out. There we go.
Hey, this is Hemp Meadows.
This is Denim Sky.
And together we're Hemp and Denim, and we're also here on the Business Side of Music podcast.
With Bob Bender.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Business Side of Music.
Wow, I just joined the Music Starts Here community. This is a truly hidden gem for anyone in the music business. Whether you live in Nashville or anywhere else in the world, Music Starts Here is like a GPS for your music career. This is the place to be if you want to get advice and direction from some seriously talented musical people who have been where you want to go. Music news, events, and a great big community with resources for artists, songwriters, musicians, studio and tech, along with music business advice from pros in the industry, all on one site. Make sure you get your free profile now go to www.musicstartshere.org. That's musicstartshere.org.
You're listening to the Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, co-host, co-producer, the inventor of the Business Side of Music, Tom Sabell, is with us.
Well, thank you for having me. And we're here with Gary Chapman.
Gary Chapman is in the house, the songwriter, recording artist, record producer, entrepreneur, and seasoned pilot who once landed on Stephen Curtis Chapman's yard.
Yes, landed his helicopter.
Yeah. Blue lawn furniture all over the place.
I love that story. Yeah.
Usually you have to wait for a tornado to come through to do that, but hey.
I'm the tornado.
You did it. Tornado Gary is here.
Yeah.
Did the police show up?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, not that time.
Helicopters are an amazing thing. We could talk a long time about that. I soloed when I was 12 in a, you know, regular prop plane. That's another long story. I shouldn't have, but I did. So most fixed-wing guys have a sincere mistrust or hatred almost for helicopters, like maybe they're demonic, because you're breaking so many physical laws, and it shouldn't make sense. You know, it's gonna stop, and then you're gonna drop like a stone, and everybody's gonna die. My brother, he was a 35-year pilot with Southwest. He and I've always been real close. He came to me one day and said, "Listen, what if we're wrong about helicopters? What if we're missing something great?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think we are." He said, "How about this? Let's both start taking lessons tomorrow. And if either one of us has that moment that we go, oh, this is why we don't fly these things, we'll honor the other one's experience and we'll wash our hands of it and move along. And because we'll know, right?" I got my license in a month, bought the helicopter I learned in, just never looked back. They're just amazing. I would rather depends on the helicopter to some degree, but like a Bell Jet Ranger, I would rather the engine quit in that than anything I've ever flown in my life. I'm not going to die. I may ding some stuff up, but I'm not going to die. It's just, it's kind of a non-event to some degree.
My brother-in-law, Jim, he's retired now, but he was a helicopter instructor.
Yeah.
And he just absolutely loved it. Of course, then he took my wife up, and I think that was like her one and only experience in a helicopter because, you know,
he scared her.
It's a sister. What's he going to do?
He's going to make her pee.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're awesome.
Television. You were on TNN, and as I think I said at one point, either during the show or during a break, you and I met there. I was managing an act that was on, what was the show? Was it Music City Live? What was it called?
It had a few names in its iteration. What I did was called Primetime Country.
Primetime Country, that's what it was. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I'm old and don't remember things.
It's okay.
Enjoyed it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really loved it.
That was back really good. You were really good.
I appreciate it. It was fun. It was in the when the opportunity came up, it was in that list of, I'm trying to make this list as short as possible, of like at the end of life, that list of things. Wow, I wonder what would have happened if, right?
What a lot of us call the bucket list.
That's it.
Yeah.
Why wait, right? So I put it in that list, and I thought I would just give it a try. I'd never done it before, didn't really have a clue what I was doing, and as it turned out, that was my strength. I did it slightly unorthodox. I'd always been a big fan. I loved Johnny Carson. I grew up watching all that stuff and really, you know, appreciated a quick response. I've had people tell me my whole life, you should be a comedian, man. You should get up on stage and tell jokes. I'm like, I don't have any material. I have nothing. I'm a responder. If something happens around me, I generally have a pretty quick answer. And that has served me well my entire life. And that's what I did there. That and being on this side, the interviewee side, for many, 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 many times, I had developed an appreciation for somebody that knew how to interview. Listening is obviously, you're doing it very well right now.
Oh, thank you.
Listening is a giant piece of it. But to genuinely be engaged, to actually understand, don't just have points that you got to hit to, you know, to make the manager and the record company all happy. Yeah, you can do that, but do that fast. And then have a genuine conversation.
I think the life stories are far more interesting anyway than, you know, we cover that base so much on this show. Okay, what are you up to and what's your new project? But to kind of start peeling away the layers of those onions.
Right.
And figuring out who you are and what you are. To me, that's so more important.
Yeah. And I watched that show many times, but the one that sticks in my mind the most is your interview with Glenn Campbell.
Oh.
That was...
He's an amazing guy. There is a YouTube video. It's like 13 minutes.
I think I've seen
something.
That, yeah. Is that where you come out and sit on a desk and talk?
Yep. It's me and Colin Ray, who's just a human jukebox. He literally knows 6,000 songs. No kidding.
Wow.
And it's not a joke. He can do it. And he's a giant, giant fan of Glenn. And it's Colin and me and Glenn Campbell, three guys, three guitars, just yucking it up and singing. And good grief, I listened to that thing a couple of months ago.
Yep. Just it's something that sticks
beautiful.
In my head. It was just, yeah.
Oh, my gosh,
I don't even have
beautiful.
Words to describe. It was awesome.
Glenn is a good friend. Crazy, crazy man. I've got lots of great Glenn Campbell stories.
And
my
you,
best golf stories.
I was
going
to say,
Campbell
you got
story.
To play good golf. I've heard that story.
Yeah.
You got to play golf with Glenn Campbell.
Well, let's hear it.
I was out with him and a guy named Rick Shipp. You remember Rick?
I remember Rick Shipp,
William Morris back in the day.
Yeah.
We were out at the Golf Club of Tennessee out in Kingston Springs. It's me and Glenn and Rick, just the three of us. We didn't have a fourth. And we're having a blast. It's a beautiful day. And we're on hole number 14. It's a par three, pretty elevated green, like you can see down, see the hole completely. I think I teed off first, and I knocked it into the sand next to the green. And then Rick tees up and just proceeds to one-hop it into the hole. Just boom, boom, it's in. And he had never had a hole-in-one. Lost his mind, just completely lost his mind, as you're prone to do, right? It's a great
Absolutely.
Thing. And we're just all screaming. Of course, all the people in the neighboring holes, they know what's happening. There's only one thing on a golf course that makes that sound. It's when you get a hole in one, it's undeniable. It happened. So we're all screaming. Glenn proceeds to knock his onto the green. Great shot. I go down and, you know, we all go down there. Glenn was riding with me and we cruise down there and nobody cares about our shots. It doesn't matter, right? But I, you know, he's just going through the motions. I got out, hopped in the trap, chipped mine into the hole out of the sand for a birdie. And Glenn goes over and two putts for a par. But nobody cares. We're all still screaming. You know, everybody's, oh, congratulations. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. We get back in the cart, and Glenn, here's how funny this guy was, how quick he was, because there's no way you could plan this. You can't have this parked at the gate and thinking, boy, one day I'm going to be able to use this, right? He gets in the cart and he says, well, that's a Lawrence Welk hole. I went, what? A Lawrence Welk hole. A one and a two and a three.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, dude, are you kidding me?
A one
and a two and a three.
Oh.
He was awesome.
Oh, that was cool.
But yeah, that show was a joy. I really, really, really enjoyed it. TNN, literally, Viacom in their infinite wisdom.
Oh, yeah.
It just went away. Literally, the whole network went away overnight.
Tom and I were talking about that at breakfast the other morning, about how Viacom just came in and says, yeah, no more.
It was just silly.
Because they didn't want the competition?
No. They had a bunch of other stuff they wanted to toss on there that they wouldn't have to pay for. It was all about it was just a money grab and a stupid thing, and they completely left a really large audience.
Oh, yeah. Because
that was back before cable had splintered.
Oh, yeah.
On a night like with Glenn, or, you know, if we had Willie on or something, we had O'Reilly numbers. Back when he was on television, we had, you know, Sean Hannity or whoever. We'd have 1.5 million to 2.5-3 million people watching this thing.
You had a market share.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just don't get it because it's never really been replaced.
No, it has not. What has happened recently has kind of fired me up a little bit. You know, RFD TV, which is, you know, it's been what it's been for a long time. It touches that same audience, but it has not really on that level served them because it takes a lot of money to do that,
right?
To put those shows together at that level. And it appears as though they have decided to get in the game. They have hired Rory Feek. Do you know Rory?
Rory, yeah, from Rory and Joey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he's just a crazy quality guy. He doesn't do anything halfway. Everything has to be just beautiful. And they've screwed up and made him the chief content officer. He and I have met a couple times. I actually talked to him yesterday. We get together next week. And we're talking about, I don't ever want to do a nightly show again. It eats your life.
Yeah.
You can't believe how hard it is. It's just so demanding. But I want to do a weekly version of what we used to do on a nightly basis. And they're fired up about it. We'll see. It feels pretty good, actually.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
That would be real cool. I'd watch it.
Yeah.
I think that group of people, that audience is the most loyal audience I've ever been around. The ones that are still breathing, I promise you, they're sitting on the couch with the remote going, honey, where's TNN?
Yep.
They're loyal. They believe in you.
It's like the old...
If you honor that, they just don't go away.
It's like the old NASCAR fans.
Yep.
You know, who had their driver, had their team, and we would watch it, and the guy wouldn't win for 5 seasons, whatever, but they would be there every weekend watching the race. And TNN, I think, was the same way. You had that audience that just... Yeah. It's like country music.
Well, speaking
loyal
of,
audience.
Speaking of NASCAR, back in those days... TNN was NASCAR.
It was NASCAR.
You know, they carried as many races as CBS did.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, Viacom's big dog, and then, you know, they would farm out part of it to TNN.
They did a much better job too.
I've still got a gorgeous leather jacket that Dale Earnhardt gave me one night. You know, that whole world was so much fun to play in.
It was.
I always wanted to be a race car driver.
Especially, you know, we talk about the golden age of television or the golden age of films. I think especially in the music business, country music business,
that era, the
90s.
That was the window.
It was the window. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I could be a part of it back then. It was just great.
I think it might come back.
I hope so.
And I actually think, like, even the genre period, the 90s for me was for many reasons, but if I'm objective, that group of artists, body of work, good grief, it's just so great.
Well, they took it to the next level.
They did.
They really did.
And with all due respect to modern stuff, some of it's great, and some of it just sucks. What's coming back are great songs. It's happening.
Finally.
Yeah, it does feel like something's happening. You're right. Something's in the air.
And great singers. Good grief. Yes. I did a thing with Mo, you know Mo Pitney?
Yes.
Good Lord. I did a fundraiser thing. Daryl Worley has a cancer foundation thing. We did this thing down at 3rd and Lindsley a couple of months ago, and Mo was there. And I'd heard him, you know, on YouTube videos or whatever, but I'd never, like, been in a room with that voice.
Yeah.
Good grief. No. That dude, he's like Merle came back. It's crazy how good he is. It's awesome. It's so fun. I'm actually fired up about country music.
I'm looking forward to it. If you can be back on the show, that's going to be great. This weekly show. You'll keep us posted on that, I take it.
The other thing I want to do is I want to do a Sunday morning thing that's dedicated to the hymns. That whole side of my life takes another long story, but my dad lived with me until he died in our home 10 years ago this year, Easter Sunday morning, right at sunrise. Unlike his idiot son, he'd never ingested anything that altered his consciousness. So having access to all the great drugs at the end of life, he couldn't go there. It was just too weird. And what brought him comfort was me sitting and playing the songs that he had taught me 50 years previous.
You have those on Facebook.
Yeah, they're on Facebook.
Facebook, yes.
My wife, in her infinite wisdom, a couple of months after he died, she said, you know, that worked, and there's more people. So we should keep doing this. So we do this thing called a hymn a week. And Rory is hip to that whole thing. He's really aware of that thing. So when I mentioned to him, I said, you know, the other thing I would love to do, and I want it to be gorgeous, but I want it to be so simple. It can't have any pretense. You cannot get in the way of a 400-year-old song. Just stay out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't screw it up. But one of the ways you screw it up is by overperforming it. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Honor that thing and let the same Holy Spirit that inspired it in the first place, that is still very much alive in it, let it happen. Just stay out of the way. And I really want to do that. So I think we're going to do that as well.
Gary, thanks for being on the show.
Pleasure.
This has been great.
Thank you, Gary, very much. I know you're a busy man, but you've made time for us.
Oh,
and we appreciate
it. This is great.
The Business Side of Music is the creation of Tom Sabella and Tracy Snow and is produced by Bob Bender. The Business Side of Music is recorded at Music Dog Studios in Los Angeles, California and Nashville, Tennessee. Production sound designed by Keith Stark. Voiceover and promo by Lisa Busan.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.